This podcast is made possible by the generosity of supporting members. Please visit dharmaocean.org to learn more about becoming a supporting member. You are listening to the Dharma Ocean podcast. In today's talk, Reggie discusses the importance of the consort relationship in the Vajrayana transmission of the practicing lineage. Consorts, he says, protect the openness of teaching spaces by interrupting attempts at securing territory. This groundlessness allows the lineage to come through. This talk was given at the 2011 Winter Datun Retreat, held in Crestone, Colorado.
Hello, everybody. Feels remarkably lonely in here. So, I wanted to say a couple things about this lineage, about 4.5 years ago, I asked Caroline if she would hold the lineage with me, and I had I know very well in the Vajrayana, a male by him or herself cannot hold the full lineage. That's not how it works, and they can't do it. And the tradition, the Indian tradition, is that the lineage is held as a relational situation by a male teacher and a female teacher, and they have very different roles, usually. Often they, traditionally the male has been more the person who's sitting up here and gives talks, and the female is the more the shamanic person who visits the other realms and holds the well-being of the community and looks after the sort of earth situation of the community. But very much a shamanic person, person who's has a direct access to lineage. But it doesn't always work that way. There have been a lot of different ways it's worked. But the most important thing is the lineage can only be held within the dynamic interplay of male and female. And it's the balance of male and female is very, very important. When the Vajrayana went to Tibet and it moved into a very hierarchical and patriarchal society, I think in certain aspects of Tibetan Buddhism, the equal play back and forth was retained, but mostly it was lost because it became a male monastic tradition largely, and the women were marginalized. But in India, it wasn't like that. In India, there was this interesting, the way men and women can be at their best when there's really an equal relationship, and the woman brings in certain things and the man brings in certain things, and it's very alive when that happens. There's no ground, at all. There's no, the relationship at that point isn't about hiding out from the world and finding some kind of secure little nest. The relationship is actually a lot more real and open than the world itself. And the basic idea is that the male and female relationship is revolutionary. It's a revolutionary kind of relationship when it's in this lineage. What I mean by that is, individual people are brought up and socialized And in every culture, you know, men are socialized to be a certain way and women are socialized to be a certain way. And the cultural expectation, you know, is defined by cultural norms. And even though cultures all vary and they're all different, nevertheless, there are these, you have gender and then you have gender roles. And the gender roles are different, but they're usually quite well defined in every culture. And in a situation of true intimacy, the what we call consort relationship, which it could be a marriage relationship, but it doesn't have to be. It could be people who are platonic friends. You know, it could be a man and a woman. It also could be same gender people. You know, it's not necessarily male and female, but it needs to be, you know, somebody holding the earth and somebody holding the heaven. You know, so gender thing is interesting. It's open. But traditionally it has been, you know, in our lineage, has been male and female. And the nature of the relationship is when both people are practitioners and there's a real equality in the relationship, nobody can pin things down. Nobody can, stake out territory. It doesn't work like that. And the way the relationship works is that because of the practice and because men and women do come at, and even individuals, but men and women in particular do come at the entity of the relationship from such different angles, things are constantly being opened and exposed, and my neurosis and her neurosis, you know, are constantly being called into question, constantly being invited to open and dissolve. And so what happens is that the relationship itself is revolutionary because it actually transcends cultural norms very soon, very, very soon. And very, very soon, you have people who are not fulfilling culturally defined gender roles. You have people who are actually on a personal journey, but the interesting thing is the relationship is on a personal journey. You know, you have your personal journey and you have your partner's personal journey, but the relationship itself actually is on a personal journey. The relationship itself becomes something that is beyond each individual person, and where it's going, nobody knows. And the relationship itself, again, calls into question all of the values that cultures usually hang on to. And, you know, all of the stereotypes that cultures hang on to, not just about men and women, but about everything. So in postmodern French philosophy, one of the more interesting themes is that the kind of relationship we're talking about destabilizes cultures. And the reason for hierarchy in cultures is so that doesn't happen. You know, if you have a male whose point of view is dominating the female, then what I'm talking about can't happen. And that's why in the Vajrayana we talk about, we have a functional hierarchy, but this is not an absolute hierarchy. You know, we are ultimately all of us peers. We have a functional hierarchy. I mean, somebody has to be umze, and somebody has to be in charge of the kitchen, and somebody has to be giving teachings, and somebody has to be practicing, and some people are newer, and some people are older practitioners. So there's a functional hierarchy, but it's not a real one. It's not real. You know, it's just functional. So hierarchy and patriarchy also is a way that cultures avoid having to change, because they disempower the relationship between men and women by the institution of patriarchy. Because in patriarchy, one gender's point of view gets to be dominant. At that point, there's no more relationship. It's not real relationship. One of the interesting problems with Asian Buddhism, which hasn't really been written about, but it needs to be, is that the relationships between men and women in Asian Buddhism are highly, highly culturally determined. And the, you know, if you go to Tibet or you go to any, you know, traditional India or traditional anywhere in Asia, the marriages happen on the basis not of personal connection and mutual spiritual inspiration, but on the basis of social values and of, you know, families making alliances and, people looking for partners that actually fit cultural stereotypes. It's not personal. So The Vajrayana is not like that. The Vajrayana is, it's not a tradition of individuals practicing in caves, even though that's a very important part of it. It is a tradition of human relationality. And to come back to what I said in the beginning, nobody can hold the kind of work that goes on here by him or herself. What I'm getting around to is the tremendous importance and the protection offered by an eye-level equal relationship with your partner as you do this path and with your Sangha brothers and sisters. I think you might be able to see, you know, why this is the case, because what we are dealing with here, as I think you, even though we've only been at this a week, I think what you can see, we're not dealing with the kind of superficial, culturally acceptable, conventional religiosity here. We're not even dealing with Buddhism that is sort of low-key and non-threatening, and, you know, everybody thinks it's nice, and, you know, and we can meditate, and we can feel calm. You know, we're not doing that. I think you see that. What we are dealing with here is the opportunity offered by Chogyam Trungpa and his teachers to make the full, authentic, profound human spiritual journey one that is in no way less than the spiritual journey that's been made back to, as far as we know. This is a very, very intense situation, as you know. It's very intense. And things come up that are really hard to handle. And both in the sense of emotions that are, you know, negative emotions. Things come up that are really hard to handle. We get angry, we get upset, we get activated. But also in terms of the other side of it, which is there's a strong tendency toward inflation. You know, when we practice deeply and we have very profound spiritual experiences that are absolutely real and totally transformative, but then we start to get ideas about ourselves, you know, based on those experiences. And those ideas can become kind of a problem, and they can legitimate all kinds of, meanness and arrogance and, you know, harmful behavior towards other people. You know, honestly, I was, around here, Mal Domasome, you know, my heart brother from Central West Africa, a very great shaman, always says there are no secrets in the village. And looking back in retrospect, I see now why I met Caroline, because I actually met a peer, and I met somebody who was willing to sit there and look me in the eye and tell me I was full of shit, or that I was too aggressive. So this is what we're looking for here. You know, our journey is so down to earth and so gritty that we need the protection of other people actually to do it. And if we are in the Sangha, we need the protection of other Sangha members. If we are in the leadership, we need the protection of our peers. If we happen to be in a relationship, if we have the blessing of a relationship where both people are practitioners and willing to show up for each other, that's amazing. And many people in our Sangha are really kind of growing in this direction. And, you know, Caroline and I are teaching quite a bit about, you know, what I'm talking to you about today. And then if you're in my position, it's a necessity, because you're not going to make it otherwise. It's too, what comes through is too strong, and we can't handle it. We don't handle it well. And it's a weird, kind of magical, very strange thing when you meet that person. Straight across, fearless. And one thing that I think is the characteristic of the relationship is, and I see it with Caroline, the lineage comes first. And, you know, I don't say this anymore because I know the answer I'm going to get, but I used to say, Caroline, you know, in very tender moments, Caroline, will you love me forever? And she goes, that depends. What it depends on is your faithfulness to the lineage. As long as you hold the lineage with integrity, I will give you my life. But if you depart from lineage, I'm out of here. And she says, she'll say it today. I'm not going to ask her because why do I need to hear this over and over and over, right? But, you know, that I think is the mark that there are three people in our marriage. Me, her, and Trungpa Rinpoche. So it's a threesome. And he, you know, when he was alive, he used to like mess people's marriages up big time. Because he would size up the situation and he would see that there, you know, this is going on and there's this game that's going on and they're not relating to each other. And so he would tell the husband and wife, he'd give them opposite instructions and tell them they had to do it. And what it would do is it would just totally destabilize things. And he would be so with the journey of the woman and so with the journey of the man that's what would be happening, and he took care of it. And the interesting thing is he's still taking care of it. In our relationship, in the relationship of other people who invite him, or the lineage, however you want to put it, into the situation. So there is a diciness to the consort relationship. There is a very, very strong journey. I can speak from the male point of view, that the men, and this is from a traditional text called the Chandra Maharoshana Tantra, it says the job of the consort, and this is the, you know, for the man, is the consort unbinds the chains around the heart of the male. The consort unbinds the chains and frees the heart. And then what happens for the female, because, you know, Caroline and I talk about it, like, well, you know, this is definitely happening for me, what's going on the other side. Because of the profound respect for the sacredness, it's not profound respect for your partner alone, because that's very tricky. It's profound respect for the womanhood and the total being of the other person, and for the feminine itself, for the sacredness, for the beauty, for the value, and for the wisdom. And that is something that cultures do not give women, and it's not given in our culture, but it also isn't given in most of the higher cultures either. When that happens, the woman is fully and completely empowered within the framework of relationality, within the framework of the relationship, to totally become herself. And that, you know, that kind of relationality of the male to the female, which really is one of service. In other words, the job of the male is to serve the feminine, strangely enough. I mean, at least in our culture, it's strange. And that unlocks both of them. You see, that's the interesting point. It unlocks it unbinds the chains around the heart of the man, and it totally empowers the being of the woman. And that, when you see these deities in embrace, that's what's going on individually. But because of that situation, then they can come together in a way that men and women normally can't. And, you know, sexual embrace is the metaphor, but we're talking about all the time. We're talking about a kind of union where, you know, as a man, you are within the experience of your partner. And as a woman, you are within the experience of your partner. And you not only know experientially what it means to be a woman as a man, but in some sense, that's the only reality there is for you in the moment of union. There's really a sense of, I had a very interesting dream I'll tell you about, which I've never had before, but I think it illustrates this. I had spent the night lying beside Caroline, and I wasn't sleeping that well, so I was doing something that we call beholding practice, which actually I'm going to teach you before the end of the Datun, which is very much receiving her energy and sort of being with her and feeling how it is for her. And again, the experience is there's no maleness involved. I mean, you're outside of yourself. You're not a man anymore. You're not anything. You're being the other person. And toward morning, I had a dream that Caroline was being Caroline, and she was doing what she does, you know, checking her emails or, I don't know, talking to a student or whatever she does. But the thing was, we weren't separate. It was like, it was the Caroline part of me that was doing that. You know, I talk about the fact that when there's a union between consorts, then that being takes precedence over, you know, that relationality, that union takes precedence over the individuality and the separateness. But in this dream, it was like, even in daily activity, you know, there was that experience of not only being connected, but being part of some larger thing, which was the relationship. So that was very interesting for me as a man. And as a man who spent most of my life, you know, my role model has always been the Lone Ranger. And when I was a five, I used to listen to the Lone Ranger on the radio. And I loved that, dun 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 dun. And he'd ride on his white horse. And that was like my thing, you know, my whole life. And all of a sudden, it's a whole different scene. So it's protection. You know, the relationship is protection. The relationship is opportunity for growth that neither person really has by themselves. And that's something else I will say, that for the Vajrayana, you can go a long, long way. But as the Dalai Lama himself says, if you are lucky enough to have some kind of relationship, doesn't have to be sexual, it can be platonic, but some kind of really intimate Vajrayana relationship can grow in a way that you can't grow by yourself. So it provides opportunities for growth, for learning, and I think, you know, it provides a sense of deep rightness and deep, very, very deep happiness and well-being. And it makes one realize that the loneliness and the separations of life are not necessary. And I have an idea, you know, as we become more and more embodied people and as our Vajrayana path includes more and more of life, that we may, each of us may have a lot of different ways to do what I'm talking about, and it may not be restricted to the Sangha, to intimate friendships, to consort relationships, whatever it may be. It may go beyond that.
To download more of Reggie's teachings, find out about upcoming retreats, and to explore a variety of audio listening guides to assist you on your spiritual journey, please visit dharmaocean.org. Music is by Jeff Beal and Nawang Ketchog from the album Tibet, Cry of the Snow Lion.